I enjoy spending time on the Coeur d'Alene River, the South Fork, and Chain Lakes. I tell my grandchildren how much better the river looks since I was a kid. I also tell them how to play clean around lead and other metals still found in the soil. We bring extra water to wash up before eating. We shake off beach towels, brush off the dog, and leave shoes on the mat. Grandma likes the idea too. To learn how generations play clean, visit the Idaho Department of Environmental Quality at www.deq.idaho.gov/playclean.
Welcome back to North Idaho Now. This is episode 39 for June 15th. Chance Watson and Josh McDonald bringing the news today. Josh, who is sponsoring us today?
This episode is brought to you by Hecla Mining Company. Hecla Mining Company is a leading low-cost silver producer with operating silver mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico. And they are a growing gold producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They are the largest primary silver producer in the United States, responsible for one-third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted, value-based culture leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit hecla-mining.com.
That was a good ad read, Josh. Nice work. Knocked that one out of the park.
I just layered a little bit of that chocolate, that dark chocolate voice is what we call that.
Brought out the stripper announcer voice.
Hello, ladies.
Coming to the stage. No, we're not going into that. Anyways, welcome back to the show, everybody. For those who are returning to us since they've been listening since SMP now, I hope that you guys have stuck around because you like the show.
Yeah.
Instead of, what would that be like?
Like they're just like apathetically like subscribing to it.
Yeah,
like
perhaps.
Gluttons for punishment.
And if this is your first episode, welcome.
Welcome.
I recently just got a Facebook friend request from an individual who just recently started listening to the show and friended me merely because they like the show.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So I
got to take a picture with a person who was trying to place my voice and figured out that
I was that a, should we do a shout out to, was that Stillwater?
Stillwater Mining.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Darren, thanks for making me feel a little bit more important than I actually am. but we're happy to bring in.
Yeah,
the
you guys, you guys are treating us like celebrities, and that's just not necessary. Or
I think it's completely necessary. Oh. In fact, I would like it to be taken to the next level.
Oh, okay.
I want front of the line, like service when I walk into a restaurant. I'm not waiting. I want preferred customer status at coffee shops.
Okay, want and deserve.
I deserve.
You deserve
preferred customer service.
Okay. All right. Well, let's. I'm gonna hijack the first part of our cold open here, because I got two things that I want to talk about that have been on my radar. First off, my second/first favorite hockey team, the Vegas Golden Knights, are in the semifinals, and they whooped up on the Montreal Canadiens last night because Montreal is not an actual hockey team.
I think it's only good for steak.
Montreal steak spice really should be part of this conversation.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, Letterkenny's got a new season and a new show.
I saw a thing online the other day, and they had sports teams winning percentages by state.
Oh.
And coming in at number 5, believe it or not, was Nevada. Nevada is home to two professional teams.
Yeah.
The Las Vegas Golden Knights and the Las Vegas Raiders.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, the Golden Knights are propping the state of Nevada up.
They are.
They are carrying that state on their back because the Raiders are hot garbage.
I thought they were mediocre.
They are mediocre.
Okay, all right. I was gonna say, like, I thought I know
not
a little
contending for a playoff.
No, player. I thought they were like a 500 team.
I'm probably not anymore.
Oh, okay.
They've been passed up by I think two teams in their division, the Chiefs, with Mahomes and the Chargers with Justin Herbert. And they might beat the Broncos, but that's a crapshoot.
Gotcha.
But no, your Golden Knights carrying the state of Nevada right now in terms of winning percentage.
And they are they're a juggernaut right now. If everything goes like how it did last night, they will be in the Stanley Cup Finals playing either Tampa or the Islanders. And if the Islanders get there, man, I'd still be rooting for the Knights, but I'd be okay if they lost to the Islanders because I respect the Islanders too. So
I'm in this really weird spot right now where neither of my favorite basketball players are still playing in the playoffs of the NBA.
Yes.
Those being LeBron
James. Yeah,
because
you're not
James.
A team guy. You're a player guy.
I'm a player guy, yeah. I find guys that I really like. LeBron James has been my dude since 2002.
Mm.
And then... my best friends can attest to this. It was probably 4 years ago. I sent a message, a little voice message into our group chat. And I'm like, all right, I need you guys to keep your eye on this dude, Luka Doncic.
Okay.
You're going to be saying and hearing this name for a long time.
Okay.
And they were like, who is he? And at the time, he was like a 16-year-old kid playing in like the Spanish league over
in Europe. you scouted this kid.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's only in like his third or fourth year in the league, and he's already probably a top 10 easily, maybe a top 5 player in the league.
Okay.
Stud. Absolute stud. But no, so I'm in this weird spot where I don't even know.
You're just kind of sitting back watching.
I'm just watching basketball, man.
What do you think about ESPN picking up the NHL now?
I think
they're going to do a lot better job than NBC.
ESPN, quote unquote, the worldwide leader in sports.
Yeah, that's their tagline.
They have been notoriously.
We're not owned by Disney, by the way. That we didn't have to say that. We did.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they call themselves that, but they don't do a very good job necessarily. I mean, I actually think they cover tennis better than they cover hockey.
They Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not an expert on ESPN, but it might be their product. Like before, they haven't had rights to the NHL.
And maybe that'll change. And
yes,
maybe
I think it will.
Having the rights, they didn't put the emphasis on it with the
analysts. They did back in the 90s and early 2000s, they had it, and then they gave it up because at the time it was referred to as the dead puck era, where a 1-0 hockey game or a 2-1 game was very common, or even a 1-1 tie.
And I think there are a few analysts that they have, that will talk hockey a little bit, especially on like the variety shows they have. I know, Tony Kornheiser and Michael Wilbon on Pardon the Interruption. They'll talk hockey.
I'm excited to see them chime in and take. I even saw, for the hockey fans out there, I think ESPN picked up PK Subban.
Okay.
As an analyst. And man, he jumped on there. He's a natural. He's crazy.
There are some guys. I think you have a few that will make sure to put it in there in their morning roundup of shows.
Sure.
Realistically, when it comes to that stuff and the diversity of it, some of these shows get so locked in on guys like LeBron and Tom Brady that even when it's like the dead of summer, they're going to still find reasons to talk about LeBron and Tom Brady.
Like
nothing going on.
Yeah, here's a documentary on what LeBron puts on his cornflakes.
Like, you know what? It was rumored that on the sands of Cuba, Tom Brady was throwing touchdown passes to LeBron.
Yeah.
And like, this is going to dominate the news hour for the next 4 hours. So hopefully that changes with hockey. I did tell you that once the Kraken get going, I'm going to try to follow the Kraken a little bit.
If we get a good if anybody is interested, I want to push here. I would be seriously considering once the Kraken get going. If our listeners want a Kraken show, like I don't know what we'd call it. You can't do what's Kraken. I'm sure that's been taken like 90 times already. But if we could do like a segment or like a talk show like covering the Kraken. That'd be cool.
What if we just called it Kraken Me Up?
Ooh, I like that. I like that. Yeah. If everybody who wants that show, please call Clint Schroeder. No, don't do that. Don't
with
call
your
him.
With your ideas.
Yes,
but any puns of like smoke cracking, we can't have that.
No,
we can't be smoke cracking.
Clint's like, thanks, Chance. The last thing I need is more phone calls.
Right.
More positive or otherwise, like he can't take anymore.
But no, it's hockey is going to be one of those things. I think
it's gonna blow up in the Pacific Northwest because of the Kraken.
Yeah, I think it's going to. I mean, the Pacific Northwest got pretty hyped with the Golden Knights.
Yeah,
and they're not even in the Pacific.
They're
Northwest.
In the Vegas. Yeah, I've spoken with a lot of people that have never been hockey fans before.
Yeah.
that are, you know, because we now have a local team, I think they'll finally get into it. And maybe they're not even, these people even fall into the category of like, not even necessarily sports fans, but they're Seattle fans. Mm-hmm. Like they don't even necessarily, they're Seahawks, Mariners fans. They don't even necessarily really even follow them closely, but sure. they will chant the name. You know?
I mean, growing up, the Seattle Sonics were the arch nemesis of Michael Jordan. So like everyone hated them. But now that I'm, a very mature adult, classy adult, able to comprehend things, I would love to see Seattle have a team again. And I think it would be easy for me to link up with a Seattle basketball team.
I still, and that's always been the plan.
To tell everybody, you know, the Seahawks can go choke.
Yeah.
Die. I'm not a Seahawks guy by any stretch of the imagination.
The poorly named Climate Pledge Arena, formerly Key Arena. I don't know how they, I don't know the line. Well, okay, we'll put it this way. The guy who named the building is also now going to space. So
good for him.
Bezos.
He does what he wants.
He does do what he wants. How's he getting up to space, by the way? Amazon have its own rocket, or is he using someone else's rocket?
I think Amazon has its own rocket.
Amazon has its own rocket? Yeah. Okay. With this rocket, will that increase my Prime shipping times?
No. No, I mean, we don't even have the drones here, so.
Then why, Josh?
Because he can. So he can beat Elon Musk into space.
Is that what this is really about?
Like a battle of the billionaires.
Ah.
That's really what it is.
Okay. So it's like, I was about to say Bruce Wayne, but there's not like another rich bad guy that he fights. He's always fighting people poorer than him.
Basically the rich guy Richard swinging contest, and that's what we're going to call it, a Richard swinging contest.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
So you read between the lines there, but that should be a fun one to watch, because while Bezos might get there first,
the newest space race is not between countries, but between rich guys.
Yeah, between rich dudes. Elon Musk is going to go there multiple times, because he's going to be like more of like a quantity over quality kind of guy, I think. And he's going to be like, yeah, well, when I got up there, I literally had a Tesla that I outfitted to fly around space.
Right. I've got a Tesla moon buggy.
Like the Winnebago. In Spaceballs.
Yes, exactly.
He's going to have the Tesla version of that flying around, just jamming people's radars.
The Raspberry.
Only one man. And Elon Musk is the man who would dare the world the Raspberry.
Elon Musk would definitely Raspberry Jam.
Yeah.
That's so. Musk.
Musk.
All right. On the Mel Brooks reference note.
There we go.
Let's push into our Coeur d'Alene Post Falls Press headline, starting with Saturday, June 12th. Headline, County's positivity rate triple the state's. This is by Bill Bewley. Kootenai County's positivity rate for the coronavirus is nearly triple the state's. According to the state's website, Idaho's positivity rate was 3.9% based on 14,705 PCR tests for the week ending in June 5th. That's the lowest it's been in a year. In comparison, the county's was 9.4% based on 1,472 tests for the same time period, the highest in 4 months, well up from 2.9% on March 27th. Quote, a higher percent positivity indicates higher community transmission and that there are likely more people with the coronavirus in the community who haven't been tested yet, wrote Catherine Hoyer, Panhandle Health District spokeswoman. More testing should be done in those areas where we are seeing higher positivity rates. So we could have a better idea of how widespread the transmission is occurring. High positivity also tells us it's not a good time to relax the precautions we've been practicing. Not sure what precautions she's talking about, but...
Oh.
stressed? Yes. Practiced? Not so much. Kootenai County's vaccination rate of 12 and older receiving either one or two doses is 39.3%, which is the second highest in the Panhandle Health District, behind only Benoit County at 40%. Per the state website. The county has earned a reputation for long being reluctant to wear face masks, which has been encouraged by some health officials to help reduce the spread of the virus.
Reluctant.
In the past week, reluctant is a very nice way of putting that. In the past week, the Panhandle Health District has had 181 new cases and one death attributed to the virus. Ada County has had 233,795 people and 12 and older receive at least one dose of the vaccine, 56.2%. Most Idaho counties are a little under 40% vaccination rate. Idaho County at 26% has the lowest. In Idaho, 41.3% of the population age 12 and older have been vaccinated, according to the state's website. Quote, we encourage anyone who is experiencing symptoms or has been in close contact with someone who has tested positive for COVID-19 to be tested, Hoyer wrote. She said, at-home test kits are available at Walmart or Walgreens if an individual does not have a primary care provider.
Oh my gosh. I just chuckle every time I read these stories anymore. And I appreciate, like, we had Panel Health on the show last week. And I appreciate
not talking about that,
yeah. But we appreciate what they do.
Not an easy job. And they have many arms. I think like maybe before the pandemic, a lot of people probably never even heard of Panhandle Health District,
right.
And their only experience with Panhandle Health District up until maybe our interview was coronavirus stuff.
Right.
So I think maybe...
Or in our case, it was just the stuff that we talked about last week.
Yeah, I was going to say, in our case here, writing it right out in Shoshone, literally almost any time that we talk about Panhandle Health District, it's about blood, pollution
blood,
and...
Yeah, blood levels and yeah, things like that.
That kind of stuff.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to the Sunday, mm-hmm. June 13th. Paper, and this is a doozy of a story. And
yeah, well, we've got two similar stories on this.
Yeah, assessing your greatest asset. This is by Madison Hardy. There is an editor's note with this story. The press is examining many aspects of the housing market this summer. This is one story in that series. Kootenai County property owners found a present in their mailbox this week. Assessment notices indicating their home is likely worth a lot more than it was a year ago.
Oh, shocking, right?
Yeah, right. For those unclear where that number came from, the press is here to break it down. Besides overseeing the vehicle licensing division, the Kootenai County Assessor's Office is tasked with appraising or evaluating properties at 100% market value set on January 1st based on the prior year's sales. By operating under the level standards mandated by Idaho Code, appraisers like Tony Steiner, the County Residential Appraisal Manager, well, that is Appraisal Residential a lot of O's
mm-hmm,
there.
Mm-hmm.
They strive for fairness and equity in the distribution of the tax burden for all Kootenai County landowners. Everybody has this misconception that we determine what a property's value is and we add things to it or whatever to make it come to a certain value, and that's not true, Steiner explained. We're just trying to reflect on what they sell for on average on the market. This is what the state requires us to assess with 10% leeway. As a result of Idaho's rapidly growing population and lack of housing supply, home value assessments have swelled in conjunction with market prices. Right now, with everything so hot, nobody cares that it's an older home, that they're paying the same for old homes as they are for a new home, Steiner told the press. It's the supply and demand from growth.
Well, ain't that the truth?
Steiner just can't stand outside a house and tell you the value. It takes him hours of data collection, including conducting studies, considering the cost of new construction, and comparing older sales to determine depreciation changes. Quote, we try to compare apples to apples as much as we can. Unlike a fee appraiser who evaluates one home at a time, the county conducts mass appraisals applied to properties of similar values. Once every 5 years, appraisers like Steiner visit Kootenai County's more than 90,000 properties to inspect the condition, landscape, structures, and improvements done by landowners. Before COVID-19, when Kootenai County homes were slightly less desired, Steiner said appraisers could study conditions that caused the one-off wildly overpriced home purchase. Quote, there are going to be outliers where someone really overpaid beyond what anyone else would have, he said. The, my wife just had to have this, or the young couple who paid extra just to be next to mom and dad. We recognize that, and we take a hard look at it in comparison to what is historically representative of the market. However, the willingness to pay over listing price becoming routine, giving appraisers like Steiner no choice but to indicate it in assessments. Yeah. Virtually every house is selling at or over the list price, and there are bidding wars and multiple offers within days. All these aspects reflect in the market, he said. In years past, when you would see a sale that once in a while doesn't fit the model, it stands out and we can ignore it. Right now, we can't. Another common misconception Kootenai County Assessor Bella Kovacs noted is that property values and property tax have a direct and proportional relationship. Quote, everyone has this perception that we value homes based on what we think their taxes should be, and we're trying to drive the taxes, Kovacs told the press. It's not like we look at the $3 million home on the lake and say, oh, well, $1 million home on the lake, this is how much property taxes you pay. That's not the case, although I think they might wish it could be.
Yeah, maybe.
Idaho operates under a levy-based tax system that's not influenced by property values, but by taxing district budget increases. Taxing districts include, but are not limited to, cities, counties, school districts, hospital districts, highway districts, water districts, sewer districts, and library districts. The total of all taxing districts' budget is divided by the sum of every property value within a district to create the levy rate, Kovacs explained. The county commission then calculate and set a levy rate applied to each valuation dollar of taxable property.
I love this last sentence in this story.
Yeah.
Madison, first off, we're at the end here. So congratulations, Madison. You just did a very good job of explaining a very complicated issue.
Yes. And now, if you're confused, and don't worry, Madison was, here is the basic formula for property tax. Levy rate times property value equals property tax. For more helpful links, head to www.kcgov.us/176. Assessor property owners have until the fourth Monday of June to contest their assessed value within the office.
Okay, so while that was a little bit of a dry story, I included it because it's very important, very relevant. It's affecting all of us in one way, shape, or form, even if you're not looking for a house right now. It is affecting you.
Right. Well, if you're renting, the taxes on that home are going to affect what your rental costs.
Yep.
And they're going to affect the rental market. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's definitely something to be cognizant of.
Absolutely. Have you heard about the Dave Smith Adoption Program? Every month, Dave Smith Motors is sponsoring a dog from Shoshone Pet Rescue and a cat from Silver Valley Cat Wranglers and covering the adoption fees 100%. This month, they are sponsoring Star, an 8-year-old female boxer. She's sweet, lovable, house-trained, and up-to-date on her vaccinations. For more information, please contact Shoshone Pet Rescue at 208-512-3401. They're also sponsoring Libra, a 1.5-year-old female cat. She's already been a mother and grandmother many times. She is very sweet. For more information, please contact Silver Valley Cat Wranglers at 208-446-7131.
Animal biology is terrifying.
Yeah, it's
frightening. There's a 1.5-year-old grandmother cat. Jeez.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to Monday, June 14th headlines. Illegal dumping increases at waste collection sites. This is by Kay Thornbrew.
Oh, man.
Weird. Weird how this
crazy.
Is.
Crazy. It's not just almost like show.
Yeah. Refrigerators, couches, and hazardous household chemicals are just a few of the items creating a mess at rural waste collection sites throughout Kootenai County. County officials are asking residents to keep watch for illegal dumping. Quote, a lot of people are not even placing the materials in the bins, said Solid Waste Director J.P. Phillips. They're throwing them on the ground. The solid waste system is solely for the use of citizens with property in Kootenai County who have paid the annual solid waste fee. The county's 13 rural collection sites are for household waste only. Large items such as furniture, tires, and wood must go to either the Ramsey Transfer Station or the Prairie Transfer Station. No commercial waste is accepted at these sites, but that doesn't stop landscapers from filling dumpsters with brush and other debris, Phillips said, or contractors from dumping sheetrock and other metals. The issue is compounded because some rural sites are understaffed. Quote, other sites are remote enough that contractors know they can get away with it, Phillips said. Kootenai County residents who have paid the annual solid waste fee can dispose of up to 2,000 pounds of waste at a transfer station at no additional cost. Quote, that's up to 2,000 pounds per trip, as many trips as they want per year, Phillips said. There's no reason for residents to be dumping trash on the ground. Though commercial waste and certain other types of garbage, such as roofing, incur an additional fee, Phillips noted that most waste can be disposed of for free. A complete list of disposal fees can be found at www.kcgov.us. Spokane County residents are responsible for much of the illegal dumping, Phillips said, as residents from neighborhood Idaho counties. Those Washingtonians. Spokane people, Just kidding. Not that angry about it, but it's fun to say. He noted that folks are visiting from far outside the area are unlikely to intentionally abuse the facilities. Quote, people who are in Kootenai County for recreation are welcome to use our sites, he said. To combat the issue, the county has installed street lights at 3 rural collection sites with plans to add security cameras in the future. The county will also place additional signage at collection sites to remind residents of the rules. Residents who see improper disposal at collection sites should note the license plate numbers of the people involved and contact the Solid Waste Department. Quote, we will likely be in contact with the Kootenai County Sheriff's Office if we get enough complaints, Phillips said. In addition to tickets, continued legal dumping could result in a reduced number of sites. Quote, we need an effort by the community to keep those sites clean and follow rules, Phillips said. It would be nice if everybody took a little pride in their dumpster site.
I love how every local politician's first thing. Oh, no, it's not our citizens. It's definitely people from neighboring counties and states. It's like, here's your sign. This is such.
It's definitely both. I mean, it's not. You can't deny that it's both locals and that's the reality.
Right. I just like how they always try to paint it like the predominant problem.
Yeah.
Like, you're right. The guy from Spokane threw the bag of trash on the ground because the guy from Coeur d'Alene put his queen size mattress.
Yeah, and that can be frustrating. I just, you know,
it is frustrating.
We all get to that part where you're staring at something in your house that you need to throw away, and you're like, "What am I going to do with this?" And right. I don't know. I mean,
the opportune dumpster just shows up in some rural area,
right?
Exactly. That's what I'm going to do.
That's what I'm going to do.
Staying in that same edition, headline: Rising Rates. This is by Kay Thornbrew, and. Well, I get all of these ones.
You get both of these today. It's just how the cookie crumbles.
Editor's note, this is another one of those stories that the press is examining the housing market. So I get to continue the dry yet informative stuff.
Fun stuff.
How much does it cost to protect a home or business?
I don't know, Josh.
As property values continue to skyrocket in North Idaho, many insurance policies aren't keeping up with the true replacement costs of homes and commercial buildings, whether property owners realize it or not. Most home insurance policies include an inflation guard provision that gradually and continually increases the limit of insurance to keep up with rising costs. In a normal market, a modest inflation guard of 4% per year is often sufficient. But the market in North Idaho isn't normal.
Weird.
Yeah. Quote, right now we're seeing that the appreciation value is significantly greater, said John Naccarato, owner of Haddock & Associates Insurance Services in Coeur d'Alene. There gets to be a point where the policy you currently have is not adequate.
Hmm.
In April, the Wall Street Journal /Realtor.com Emerging Housing Market Index identified Coeur d'Alene as the country's hottest emerging housing market. The median residential sale price of Coeur d'Alene region rose in March to $476,000, according to the Coeur d'Alene Association of Realtors, an increase of 47% from the year before. A policy that covered a home worth $300,000 in 2016 likely wouldn't cover the cost of replacing it now in the event of a fire or other disaster, Naccarato said. It can be challenging to determine the real replacement cost of a home or commercial property in the first place. Insurance companies have their own replacement cost estimators, but used to calculate the value of a property, Naccarato said, but the system is not perfect. Quote, these replacement cost estimators don't take into consideration what the market is doing, Naccarato said. In an effort to sidestep these issues, Naccarato said he knows of an insurance company that increased coverage on commercial properties in North Idaho by 25% across the board. Quote, some people don't like that, he said. They don't want to pay the additional premiums, even though it's protecting them at a time of loss.
Hmm.
Naccarato noted that owners of commercial property should be mindful of whether their policy includes a co-insurance clause. Some insurance policies require clients to carry coverage for a certain percent of their property's value. For instance, if a building is valued at $100,000 and the insurance policy has a clause with co-insurance percentage of at least 80%, the client must insure the building for at least $80,000. Purchasing less coverage can result in steep penalties. For property owners that have significantly increased in value, the gap between the current and required coverage can be large. Quote, people should be evaluating their property values due to the market to make sure their coverage is adequate, Naccarato said. Under normal circumstances, Naccarato advises that homeowners evaluate their insurance coverage every 2 or 3 years. Commercial property owners should review their coverage annually, he said. Because not all insurance agencies reach out to each client, Naccarato emphasized the importance of owners proactively reviewing their coverage. Quote, people need to be advocates for their own assets, he said.
It's just so many costs going up. I mean, we've been talking about here. I mean, this directly ties into, you know, the employer crisis that we're currently experiencing. I think the housing situation and the increasing costs associated with the housing situation are going to force employers to pay more. I think that's the only way to get around it. It's not the fault of the employer, you know, it's not, but at the same time, people got to live,
right?
You know, there comes to a certain point where people are going to have to start finding new jobs to survive, I guess. I don't know.
Yep.
It's nuts.
It is.
It is totally nuts right now. All right. Moving on to Tuesday, June 15th headlines. Two arrested for fentanyl possession. This is by Kay Thornbrew. Boy, talking about one other thing that we've been talking about for a while. Yep. Two people are facing felony charges after police allegedly found them in possession of fentanyl, a drug that has been linked to numerous fatal overdoses in North Idaho. Leia Bartholomew, 35, of Coeur d'Alene, is charged with two counts of possession of a controlled substance, both felonies. She is also charged with possession of drug paraphernalia and injury to a child, both misdemeanors. David Toe, 30, is charged with possession of a controlled substance and concealment of evidence, both felonies. He is charged with injury to a child, a misdemeanor. Idaho State Police stopped Bartholomew's vehicle in Coeur d'Alene around 1 a.m. Friday for an alleged traffic violation. The driver, identified as Bartholomew, reportedly told police that she had a vape cartridge in the vehicle that contained THC, the chemical responsible for most of marijuana's psychological effects. Toe was a passenger in the vehicle, along with a teen girl. A search of the vehicle allegedly yielded a bag that contained numerous pills that Bartholomew said were fentanyl. Fentanyl is a synthetic opioid more than 50 times more powerful than morphine or heroin. Police also said that they found meth, marijuana, and drug paraphernalia in the vehicle, including pipes and foil. When police poured out a beverage Toe had been drinking, they reportedly discovered a small container filled with more fentanyl pills. Toe allegedly told police that he had concealed the pills in his cup when police initiated the traffic stop. Police arrested Bartholomew and Toe at the scene. In court Friday, Judge Clark Peterson noted an incredible spike in fatal fentanyl overdoses in North Idaho. Local law enforcement said the overdoses are connected to dangerous counterfeit prescription pills. About 1 in 6 counterfeit pills circulating in the community contains a lethal dose of fentanyl, according to the Coeur d'Alene Police Department. 5 fatal overdoses involving counterfeit pills were reported in Kootenai County during an 8-day period in May. Those who died were between the ages of 15 and 60. Well, that's a pretty big gap. The source of the pills remains under investigation. In the meantime, Lieutenant Bill McLeod of the Coeur d'Alene Police Department said last month that ensuring the safety of the youth in North Idaho is a top priority. Quote, please help us put an end to the devastation these families are experiencing, he said. Police encourage parents to talk to their children about the dangers of unprescribed pills. Quote, these kids are playing Russian roulette when they try these pills and don't even know what they're holding. Don't even know they're holding a holded gun, a parent connected to an overdose case said. Judge Peterson ordered that Bartholomew be held on $75,000 bail and that Toe, who was reportedly on probation at the time of his arrest, be held on $40,000 bail. Anyone with information who is supplying counterfeit prescription pills can contact the Coeur d'Alene Police Department at 208-769-2320 or the Idaho Drug Tip Hotline at 1-800-524-7277.
Jeesh.
And it actually reminds me I need to speak with ISP and get their DEA guy on the show. We've been just trying to figure out a schedule to get him on, but yeah, he'll give us some more information on this epidemic.
Yeah. Also in today's paper, two soups step down before new one arrives. This is by Devin Weeks. Three top-ranking administrators from the Coeur d'Alene School District are all on their way out the door before the new superintendent has even arrived in town. Steve Cook, who served as superintendent since July 2018, will leave the district officially on June 30th. In the wake of his departure, Assistant Superintendent of Secondary Education and Curriculum Kelly Nichols, Assistant Superintendent of Elementary Education and Instruction Kate Orozco have also submitted their resignations. Orozco will leave at the end of this month. Quote, after 6 years in this amazing school district, it is time for me to find a different leadership role that will help me to nurture and respond to the leadership insights I have gained here, Orozco said in an announcement from the district on Monday. Quote, I am certain enough about those insights that I will be exploring other educational leadership opportunities that will allow me to continue to serve both student and adult learners. Nichols joined the district in 2020 when her predecessor, Trina Cottle, accepted a position with the Post Falls School District. Nichols has accepted a position with the Cheney School District. She will be Assistant Director of Teaching and Learning for Secondary Schools. She will be with the Coeur d'Alene School District through the first week of July. A new human resources director was hired this spring as well. Kelly Ostrom, who served for 33 years, retired April 6th. Eric Davis of Turlock, California, was selected as the new human resources director. Davis is a human resource professional with experience in education and the private sector. Quote, I am incredibly excited to begin working with all of you and can't wait to start meeting the dynamic team I've heard so much about already, he said in a February district announcement. Quote, I'm thankful for the welcoming spirit and look forward to serving you by collaborating on the opportunities that lie ahead. With so many changes at the top, the press contacted Coeur d'Alene School Board Chair Jen Brumley to address any worries she may have. Quote, I am not concerned except to the extent we want to fill these big shoes with amazing people, Brumley said. I am excited to have Dr. Hawker come in here soon. He will play a role in choosing two very important people that will assist him in what I hope will be years to come. Quote, we are sorry to see these individuals leaving, but it opens new doors and new opportunities for our district, she said. Hawker's contract with the district begins July 1st. Quote, it's our goal to fill both assistant superintendent positions by July, District Communications Director Scott Mabin said. Later this week, an interview team that includes Dr. Sean Hawker will interview semifinalists for an assistant superintendent of elementary education and instruction. In addition, we have posted internally to the assistant superintendent of secondary education and instruction position. Dr. Hawker will also be actively participating in that hiring process.
Those are some important roles. Got to get some good people in there.
There's a lot of elementary schools in that district.
Yeah, there really are, though.
Yeah.
Just a couple. If you're looking for a refreshing locally made beer, check out Radio Brewing at 319 Main Street in Uptown Kellogg. The tap room is open 7 days a week. Stop by and try their Big Hop Mess version 3. Silly amounts of Mosaic, Citra, Cashmere, and Idaho 7 hops make this the IPA for IPA enthusiasts. Radio Brewing, put radio in your mouth hole.
SMP headlines.
Moves us right into Shoshone News Press headlines for June 15th.
You have the headline.
I do have the headline. This is a follow-up on something we actually talked about before. Actually, I don't know if we talked about it on the show.
Did.
But
I think
we did on the show?
Yeah.
I knew it was
stolen campers.
Stolen camper. Yeah, well, in addition to some other stuff as well. Headline, SCSO arrests thieves, recover stolen property. In what seems to be a rash of thefts and this is by myself, by the way. In what seems to be a rash of thefts and burglaries recently in Shoshone County, law enforcement has once again taken suspected responsible parties into custody and recovered many stolen items. Shoshone County Sheriff's Office Captain Jeff Lee reports that on June 12th, deputies and a U.S. Forest Service officer arrested James Spencer, 50, of Coeur d'Alene, and Sandra Latimer, 56, of Kellogg, for charges relating to the thefts of a 2020 Salem Cruise camper, a Ford Ranger pickup truck, a black toolbox, and various other items. Law enforcement located the items and the suspects after responding to a report of trespassing on private property located just off of Riverview Drive near milepost 40 around 11:30 a.m. that same day. Quote, The property owners noticed a red tube across the driveway in their property that they did not place there, and they observed a camper on the property, Captain Lee said. When law enforcement arrived on scene, they attempted to make contact with the occupants of the camper, but no one was home. Attempting to determine the owners, the VIN number of the camper was called into dispatch, and results showed that it had been reported stolen. The 33-foot camper was stolen between May 31st and June 6th from private property in the Eagle Creek and Pritchard Creek Road area. At that point, law enforcement took a look around the area to ensure that no one was hiding. In the midst of that search, a Ford Ranger was discovered, the very same one that had been reported stolen from residents just outside of the city of Pinehurst that morning. Deputies in the United States Forest Service officer ended up searching most of the property, equivalent to the size of a city block, and came across a recently used campsite and various personal items, but no people. Knowing the area, deputies then decided to visit a neighboring house to the campsite that SCSO had prior dealings with. While speaking with the multiple occupants of the home, the U.S. Forest Service officer spotted Spencer emerging from a small metal shed near the home and immediately took him into custody. Based on conversations with the home occupants and Spencer, Latimer was determined to be a co-conspirator to the thefts as well. She would later be arrested that day in the Eagle Creek area. Both Spencer and Latimer were said to have been living in the camper after they allegedly stole it. I don't follow that line of logic at all, but okay. Stealing a camper in the first place, I just don't.
Right.
We're going to hide. I'm going to hide this on somebody else's property. That's brilliant. In addition to the camper and truck, multiple other smaller items were recovered from the area. While the investigation remains ongoing, many of the stolen items have been returned. Quote, there's a large amount of property there, so that's why it's still ongoing, Lee said. There could be property that people don't even know that's been stolen. I'm just glad we were able to get the property back to the rightful owners. Mm-hmm. Spencer's initial jail booking criminal charges include two counts of grand theft, criminal conspiracy, and use of possession of drug paraphernalia. Latimer was booked for charges of criminal conspiracy and possession of less than 3 ounces of marijuana. Lee stated that both individuals have had numerous run-ins with SCSO over the years. If you or someone you know is missing something, contact the Chisholm County Sheriff's Office at 208-556-1114 or your local law enforcement agency.
Awesome.
Good to hear that they're finding people's stuff.
Yeah. Moving to the center of the page there, Wallace Pool accepts bid for repair work. The city of Wallace is one step closer to having their swimming pool back up and open for business. On Wednesday evening, the Wallace City Council accepted a bid from contractor SNL Underground to repair the pool. For the city, getting to this point hasn't been easy. When the pool mysteriously began losing water during the early part of summer 2018, officials began attempting to figure out what the cause was. The problem was, a real solid answer never materialized other than there was an undetectable leak somewhere in the pool that allowed water to escape without there being any evidence to figure out where that leak was. That was an interesting time when we were like, they would lose half the water in the pool overnight.
I'm like, oh.
Couldn't find it anywhere.
Where's it going?
Yeah. The city then spent nearly $30,000 with aquatic engineering firm Terracon, who told the city that the cost to redesign and repair the pool should be in the ballpark of $450,000. After putting the project out for bid multiple times and in turn receiving and rejecting bids that were all significantly higher than the estimated price from Terracon, the city finally accepted SNL's bid of $997,750. So, like, double, more mm-hmm. than double. Mm-hmm. Councilwoman Heather Brandstetter has been at the forefront of the fundraising efforts to ensure that the project could be paid for, and it appears that they have the necessary money. Quote, we have appeared to secure the funding, Brandstetter said. With one quarter coming from Department of Commerce grant and the remaining coming from a combination of generous donations and city money designated to the pool. The grant will be administered by the Panhandle Area Council, who required the city to complete an income survey that showed that the city's households were at least 51% low to moderate income in order to qualify for the grant. The Wall City Council voted in favor of pursuing the grant during a special session in early July of 2020 that also included a public forum that was held in September of that year. Brandstetter also wanted to extend some appreciation to Wallace City Clerk Christina Larson, who was invaluable to the process of securing the funds. Quote, our city clerk went above and beyond during the whole pool fundraising time, Brandstetter said. I think Christina's work throughout this process made a huge difference in getting the money needed to accept the bid. Larson herself also credited Councilman Dean Cooper for being a driving force in gathering donations. No exact date for the project has been set, but the news press will continue to follow the story as the project begins and progresses.
I mean, good for the folks at Wallace.
It's been a long time. I mean, they've not had a pool for 4 years now, mm-hmm. 4 summer seasons. Mm-hmm. So
it's been a while.
Tough out for them.
Yep.
Hey, yep. You know what time it is?
Is it Watts time?
It is Watts time.
It's Watts happening.
And Watts Happening is brought to you by Watts Appliance. Watts Appliance has been providing incomparable customer service to the Silver Valley for over 50 years. The family-owned and operated business has a wealth of knowledge regarding appliances and the brands that they sell. Whether you're in need of a new washing machine or have questions about refrigerators, Watts Appliance is ready to help. Visit wattsappliance.com or stop by and visit them at 3 North Division Street in Pinehurst. And Watts Happening, kind of an interesting one today, coming to us from the Kellogg Evening News on June 15th, 1981. Headlines, rainouts dominate Levi League. This is a story about our local baseball league being put on hold due to several nasty rainstorms that rocked the area during June of that year. Also in that paper, Kellogg Nurse helped save woman's life, and it was knowledge of CPR training, which now seems like such a commonplace thing. Mm. But apparently 40 years ago, CPR was still a cutting edge, new medical, what did they do before? Oh dear, the boy's got water in his lungs. He's gone. Wheel him out. He's toast. But now they're push on his chest, breathe in his mouth. We'll get that water to come up.
Good
somewhere.
To go.
Yeah. Also in that paper, Kellogg Merchant wins the $1,000 prize in the 40th annual Lead Creek Derby. I'm sure a Kellogg winner of the Lead Creek Derby just cooked all those Wallace people celebrating Gyro Days. Speaking of which, Gyro Days is this weekend.
It is coming up this weekend.
Shout that one out.
I will be bartending.
Celebrity bartending.
Yes, at the Brooks Hotel.
And then also a quick headline from the 1922 June 15th edition of the Wallace Miner. Stock quotes of Coeur d'Alene, they listed out the stock quotations of every Coeur d'Alene mine or Coeur d'Alene district mine. And I'm telling you, the names on these it's just wild. And we're going to see if some of them tickle your guys' fancy here. The Caledonia, the Callahan, Hecla, Marsh Cone, Rex Con, Richmond, Success, Ambergris, which is like whale throw up. Mm-hmm. Bullion, Benton, Kearney Copper, Carbonate Hill, Copper King, Cork Province, Electric Point, Elk, Gertie, Galena, Guelph, Happy Day, Highland Surprise, Home Builder, Hypotheek, Hummingbird, Idaho Gold, and Ruby.
I like these names.
Yeah. There's the McGilvery Creek, mm-hmm. Moonlight, Jack Waits, Ivanhoe, Inner Mountain, Silver Cable, West Hunter, Tamarack, Sherman Lead, Western Union, or Colonial Building. Just kind of cool to see how the industry kind of has waxed and waned over the years. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's just amazing how many mines used to be up and operating here. And now I think we're probably right around 10.
Yep.
When you start counting in some of the smaller outlying ones that have people working in them,
yep,
serious or not.
Yep.
But that was What's Happening.
What's Happening. If you love working on cars, now is your chance because Silver Valley Tire is hiring. Silver Valley Tire is hiring for a lube and tire technician. Please swing by Silver Valley Tire at 407 West Cameron Avenue in Kellogg for more information about the position and to pick up an application.
That's going to take us right into the Bonner County Daily Bee headlines. First, for Saturday, June 12th, Snafu Delays Initiative Drive. This is by Carolyn Lobsinger. For now, Reclaim Idaho's Quality Education Act is on hold until next week. The grassroots citizens group learned early Friday, just a day after it got the green light to begin collecting signatures with the aim of getting on the ballot, that the Idaho Secretary of State's office had neglected to give the group the financial impact statement. Under a new law adopted by the Idaho legislature, the statement is required to be included in any petition drive in order for the initiative to be considered valid. Quote, they did not communicate to us that the statement needed to be included with our initiative before we circulated for any signatures, Luke Mayville told the Daily Bee. Quote, in fact, you know they actually gave us the go-ahead to start collecting signatures, even though the statement wasn't prepared yet by them. Oof.
Hmm.
Mayville said the group hopes to get the document from the Idaho Secretary of State sometime next week. Volunteers can then begin collecting signatures. Quote, it looks like early next week we'll get the official go-ahead, he said. So that's just a bit of frustration. Fortunately, the group hadn't planned to begin any signature collections until next week, in part because they hadn't expected to get the approval from the state to begin the initiative drive until then anyway. The ballot initiative, dubbed the Quality Education Act, would be paid for by tax increase to corporations and Idahoans making over $250,000 per year, Reclaim Idaho officials said. For individuals, the tax would apply to income above the $250,000 mark. Married couples would pay the new tax for income over $500,000. A low-key effort had been planned while Reclaim Idaho waits for the Idaho Supreme Court to hear the group's lawsuit over the state's new initiative law. Under the law, initiatives require signatures of 6% of registered voters in all 35 legislative districts instead of the previously required 18. That is interesting. I think the thing about it that is kind of concerning to me is while this whole new initiative law has been really, championed as better for rural communities. Mm-hmm. It really almost seems like it's just trying to get citizen initiatives.
It does seem like that.
It's trying to choke out citizen initiatives.
It does seem like that.
And there are some that Reclaim Idaho have done that, like, I will venture to say I have agreed with some of the stuff that they've been doing. But then there's others that I don't always agree with.
Right.
But that being said, they should still have the ability to do it, and they shouldn't be kind of put in a stranglehold to get it done.
Regardless of whether you're a fan of the initiative or not, I think people can get behind the idea that citizen initiatives are important. You know, like, it needs to be able to get something. If the people want to get something on the ballot to be voted on, I think that's very important.
Yeah.
Regardless, if you like it or not, you know, if you don't like it, then talk to your representative and then they'll vote against it. That's kind of how our process works. Yep. So the fact that we'll put it that way, whether I'm for or against your initiative, I'm pro initiatives.
Yes.
There you go. Moving on, Priest River Ministries received $20,000 grant. Priest River Ministries Advocates for Women has received a $20,000 grant from the Idaho Community Foundation's Forever Idaho North Grant Program, one of the largest grants given. Priest River Ministries is a faith-based nonprofit that provides ongoing support for women and children of domestic violence, sexual assault, and trafficking. Oh, and sexual assault and trafficking. They provide victim services and advocacy, a learning lab, legal assistance, and community education. Priest River Ministries has received $4,000 to $5,000 from Forever Idaho North each of the last 5 years. As a result, Executive Director Rhonda Encinas said the grant amount was unexpected and came after a busy and challenging 2020. Quote, "We need to regroup and figure out how to best serve our communities with fewer people choosing to work or volunteer," she said. "We hope to use this surprise funding to hire a part-time manager for our Spirit Lake location." The Idaho Community Foundation loosened restrictions on its Forever Idaho grants this year based on what it's learned during the last year's record-breaking grant making. ICF gave more than 2,100 grants totaling nearly $12.4 million in 2020. Quote, "Given larger grants with fewer restrictions on how to spend them was crucial to nonprofits working on the front lines of the COVID-19 crisis in Idaho," said Kara Nielsen, ICF's Vice President for Philanthropy and Impact. Quote, "We are carrying that forward with our Forever Idaho grants this year." ICF gave 32 Forever Idaho North grants totaling almost $241,000 in the North Idaho counties of Benoit, Bonner, Boundary, Clearwater, Idaho, Kootenai, Latah, Lewis, Nez Perce, and Shoshone.
Yeah. Moving on to Sunday, June 13th, headlines, Cats Escapes Inspire Children's Books. This is by Carolyn Lobsinger. "Not long ago, my people brought me here," Socks tells Pepper as they lounge at the Kitty Hotel. "When they picked me up, they took me to the house I'd never seen before. Different smells, different feels, different everything. Yuck."
This definitely sounds like Carolyn wrote this.
Yes. And like the real-life Socks, the fictionalized orange tabby in Socks Looks for Home tells his new friend of his efforts to find home after a move to a strange place by his people. The real Socks adventure began when Paul and Sue Graves decided to move from their longtime home to a new house across town. They are no strangers to the ways of cats. After the move, the couple kept Socks inside for several days, acquainting him with his new home. After what they thought was an appropriate amount of time, they let Socks out in his new backyard. When they went to let him in, Socks was gone. Paul and Sue immediately started looking for him, calling his name and asking their new neighbors if they had seen seen an orange tabby. No luck. Quote, this went on for 2 or 3 days, Paul Graves said. Then we thought, well, I wonder if he went back to the old house. But when we had not heard of cats doing that, although we've subsequently found that they do. So the couple called the owners of their old home and talked to the woman who was renting the home. A day or two later, she called, I think I saw him. Excited, the Graves rushed over. Unfortunately, it wasn't socks. While an orange tabby, this one had long hair and belonged to the neighbor across the backyard fence. A day later, the couple got another phone call. I think I've seen him. In fact, he's back here in the alley. This time, armed with food, the Graves returned to their old neighborhood, headed to the alley, and called Sock's name. Quote, he poked his head around the fence and came over to get the food, Paul said. We picked him up and took him home, and he was fine for a good long time. A few weeks went by, and Sock seemed to be settling in, but then one morning they woke up, the front door was open, and Sock was gone. Graves had accidentally left the door slightly ajar and had been blown open by the heavy winds that pummeled the region that night. They alerted the woman renting their old home and the neighbor across the alley that Sox had gone another walkabout and to keep an eye out for him. Sox was sighted several times, but he would never come close enough for Paul or Sue Graves to pick him up. Worried, the couple made regular trips to their old neighborhood. Sox ran away several times. Several times.
Mm.
And each time Sox ran away, Graves would let the staff at North Idaho Animal Hospital know he was missing in the event he was brought in and had his microchip read. After Sox's third runaway and the third home, one of the vet techs looked at Graves and suggested that he write a book. And at first he dismissed the idea. But the idea wouldn't leave his head. So, kind of an interesting thing there. Then he realized Sox should be telling his story. Once he completed the children's book, Graves turned to friends as well as the Pend'Oreille Arts Council seeking advice on who might illustrate his tale. A friend who lived in Pullman suggested a young friend of his, Julie Coyle. When the couple met Coyle and her husband in Spokane, there was an immediate bond. While the artist didn't have any cats, she had owned them in the past and was familiar with the personality quirks. Coyle visited the Graves' home and made sure to get pictures of Sox and both their new home and old home. She even asked the couple to take a selfie. Then she went to work, adding movement and capturing Sox's personality and attitude. The book goes to press on June 15th and will be available at Vanderford's and the Corner Bookstore in Sandpoint later in the week. Book signings are tentatively planned for July.
Sounds like a book that needs to go in a place.
It does sound like a good one. I think I know a lady who owns a shop that could put
that
another
that could probably local, put the book up. Yeah,
put a cat book in there.
I think so too. Once again, we'd like to thank Hecla Mining Company for sponsoring this episode. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history and by innovating new practices. They also are leading the fight against the crab people under the ground. I'm just kidding. That's I just made that up. Hecla doesn't do that, as far as I know.
But to learn more about them and the crab people,
visit heclaminingcompany.com. So, had to make sure you're still listening, listeners.
Yes.
Thanks again for listening, everybody. We really appreciate it. Please like, comment, and share all of our stuff on social media. If you're interested in any of the stories we talked about today or the ones we did not, check us out at www.coeurdaluepress.com, shoshonenewspress.com, bonnercountydailybead.com, or the bonnersferryherald.com. If you listen to us on a podcatcher, please follow and or subscribe to us so you can get every episode as soon as it comes out. Folks, if you're a new listener, mash that subscribe button so you can become one of the followers, become one of the informed.
You will always have the newest episode. It'll come right to whatever device you listen to your podcasts on. So
absolutely
makes it pretty easy.
All right, everybody. Thanks again for listening in and we'll see you on Friday.
Bye-bye.